We're back with the Danger Room's 24 Days of Christmas. This year, we're doing one episode per affiliation, each with its own special guest. We made an effort this year to bring in some guests from all over the world. Sit back, listen, and Merry Christmas.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Danger Room Christmas edition. This time, we have Mr. Steve Cole from the UK. Tell listeners who you are, Steve.
Hey, Mike, how you doing? Good to be here. So my name's Steve Cole. I am a Scottish person living in England for far too long, and I've got sort of many and varied background in wargaming coming to MCP only really recently, in like maybe the last 7 months, something like that. But Mike and I met at WTC, where we didn't get to play each other, but we played each other's teams in the second round, I think. So we had quite a lot of conversations after that. And thanks for reaching out and asking me to come on and talk about big murder balls of high point cost models.
Yeah, I mean, Sploosh was like, I got absolutely destroyed in my game. He says he was close, though. I think the Gazemo reroll was the difference of the entire game.
Yeah, it's classic MCP, right? There's like one thing that's like, you know, classic MCP and with two players who kind of, well, I kind of know I'm doing Sploosh, obviously knows who's doing, you know, like one roll goes one way and then the whole thing just snowballs. Especially when we were both essentially running great big murder balls. So yeah, it was a good game though, and I appreciated his comments about obviously the fine Scottish biscuit that is a shortbread that we gave to him, and he was saying his wife was mad for shortbread afterwards, which, if your listeners don't know, is a butter based cookie, I guess, to use the North American vernacular.
Yeah, that was something we as a team needed to do better for next time WTC, is we didn't have any gifts for anyone. So yeah, that was definitely an oopsies on our part. But next time we'll have some.
Oh, that's just veteran status for our team. That's because we've been in exactly that situation of turning up. Yeah, being like, oh shit, we've got nothing, you know. And everyone's like, hey, literally, we played one of the first Guild Ball WTCs. We played like Slavit, and they brought like home brewed Palinka that they'd made, the national spirit from. And yeah, this is amazing. And we had nothing. So like, yeah, I've been there. Don't worry.
Yeah, so next time we'll definitely have that. But yeah, so Steve played on Norbert's team. For anyone familiar with Norbert, he played a Black Order and an Inhumans duel. I don't think anyone really runs mono Black Order these days.
Not since, I don't think there's any reason to, since the gems got unrestricted.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. All their models are so expensive. Like Supergiant doesn't really function, so it's like they don't really have any cheap models to run. So you're probably just running a tall duel.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, and we can talk about this a bit later. Like, most of what I use the duel for is to try and solve 15 threat, which I chat to Sploosh a bit about afterwards. I know he solves by using cheaper Thanos, but I am not that bold. I'll go down I will play to the key strengths of it, and then I'll try and patch other bits of it.
Yeah, I think Sploosh actually, he got lucky in one of the later rounds where his opponent, he got paired into somebody. And then that guy's teammates were like, they saw him just one gem Thanos. They were like, do not pick 15 threat. They told the teammate that. And then the guy picks 15 on Researcher. And Sploosh is like, oh, I feel pretty good that I have one gem Thanos.
Yeah, this was the plan all along, right? Like this, this was like, this is great. Like, yeah, it's like when you don't need to drag models and someone just walks them up to you, you're like, wow, this is just doing my work for me. This is amazing.
Yeah, then Corvus proceeded to just remove CGR from the table and the game was over. So
he'll do that. He'll definitely do that, man. That's it.
Yeah. So, all right. So you are off the Inhumans duel. Tell listeners where you're at now. It's pretty exciting.
So at the moment, yeah. So I think the key thing to say for that is, yeah. So basically I have like seven models I'm always going to run in Black Order that I've got to a point where these are the seven that are in, and then it's playing around with the other duels. So at the moment, the one I ran for TTS cuts was X-Force, like affiliation Splash, which is sort of batting around various models at the moment. So definitely Cable, definitely Cat and Mouse. And then I've tried Domino, I've tried Colossus. I think where I'm actually weirdly landing is OG Wolverine and Colossus. And this is, I'm only playing this at 15 threat. Like, that's the idea. Because I find 15 threat tricky to manage, I might play Colossus or Wolverine in different variations of Black Order. Not Colossus. I'm never playing Colossus in Black Order, sorry. I might play Cable if I want someone who can move about a bit more than, say, Corvus, but I don't have like an obvious home for him. And then the other bit I'm vaguely rethinking at the moment, which I probably won't do, and we can talk about Ghost Rider in a bit, but like, there's definitely scope just to play Space Reality Thanos and Ghost Rider and another model in Black Order if you wanted everyone to hate your guts almost as much as they hate Guardians players. But part of me is thinking, like, if you're going to do that, you might as well just play Guardians, right? Like, because they're actually better in Guardians. So in Black Order, I think that's the idea. It's the two big issues I found with Black Order is, what do you do at 15? And I know one of the Austrian players who also played Black Order at WTC we spoke to was saying at 15 he just plays no leadership. Like, he doesn't play Thanos, he just plays Corvus. He doesn't use the leadership card, and he just plays, which I think it can work. And then the other issue they have, other than 15, is what do you do against particularly like Sam Avengers and teams who are just real fucking good at running away from you? And that's the two challenges. At the moment, I'm trying to patch the 15 challenge. That seems like more of a concern. And I just sort of cross my fingers when Sam Avengers turn up or get knocked out by them, as happened in TTS.
I mean, it seems like you could, this is like the most meta thing ever, but you could just play like Star-Lord and Bill with Ghost Rider and a 2 threat.
You could totally do that. And also, I already have Nebula in the list. So you could do that. You could definitely do that. I feel like at that point, you might as well just play Guardians. Like, I think, you know, there's enough, like, so I think there's a little bit of, I guess, how do you, I want to play Black Order, so how do I make a Black Order list that works in the meta without basically splashing into, you know, one of the strongest factions in the game? Otherwise, I might as well just play that. I think that's probably where I am on that. I don't think there's much argument that Guardians are stronger than Black Order at the moment, like having just seen a Guardians mirror match in the TTS finals and things like that. But yeah.
So at 15, you're playing Cable, Colossus, Wolverine, which is 13, and then a 2 threat.
So 15 is basically Cable, or it's Colossus or Wolverine, and Ghost Rider. Like, that's the 15 threat team. Essentially, I think we can talk about this more about protect. All I'm trying to do basically with that entire list is play murder balls all the time. So with that, it's basically Colossus's, do I need someone to stand on a point and, you know, and not die, or do I need more models to chase things down with, in which case I play Wolverine. And I've already got exceptional healing in because Logan is one of the core models in the book. Like, he's one of the three splashes in the Black Order list, so I've already got exceptional healing in there. And in terms of Crisis, we're going around the houses here a bit, so we can talk about maybe top level, but like, in terms of Crisis, I have Fisk in my Crisis selection, so having Wolverine in there is fine because that gives me two stun immune models in Black Order.
Are you playing Cosmic Ghost Rider on Fisk? I mean, stun seems bad without crew.
Yeah, no. I'm to be honest with you, so I'm not playing Cosmic Ghost Rider that much, and I don't think anyone's wrong to play him more than I do. Like, he's obviously an extremely powerful model. I think I've played a lot of like competitive war games, and I've done pretty well at them, so I'm not in a place where I'm like, I'm gonna have to play the strongest thing possible all the time in order to win. Like, that I've done well doing that, and I'm not in MCP for that particularly. I want to be competitive, but I want the mechanics of it. So I'm more interested in, you know, Corvus Proxima, Thanos, those mechanics than in just like Ghost Rider. There's a few things I will play him in where I just feel like this is the only solution to this matchup. So like into Shield, for example, but I played Ghost Rider twice in 5 games at WTC. And there, he's like, I can see why people like him, but he's a bit too much of a Yahtzee model for me. I don't feel like I'm doing anything. There's some clever stuff you can do with him, but I don't feel like there's anything particularly tactically exciting for me about him.
For any listeners that aren't hyper tuned into any super competitive events or the TTS leagues or whatever, but Ghost Rider is like, he's typically just a negative play experience for somebody at the table. Like, either he just like rolls bad and does nothing, and then the player's playing him is like, why am I playing this model? Or he just one-shots everything, and then your opponent's like, why am I playing this game?
Yeah, exactly. And I think also the difference, I guess, with Black Order and some of the other factions is he is, like, I think he's still super strong. I think he's slightly more balanced in it by virtue of you're often only running 3 models. So if one of them can't score objectives, there are just games where you're like, and you know, you can't carry that. Like, you know, if you have if you get a high scoring Crisis combination, you can't carry a model that can't score and contest objective points. Like, because that's definitely in the big Black Order game plan is basically try not to let your opponent run away from you as much as possible and then reel them back in over the later turns.
Right, and you use the leadership to not fall behind.
Yeah, exactly, and get those sort of catch-up points. So you'd usually, like, if you go into turn one level, you're doing great. Like, that's where you, like, you know, like, you're not ever going to be like, hey, I'm up by 4 points on turn one, unless your opponent's made a really disastrous error. But Ghost Rider can be tricky in that. Like, so when you're playing, if you've got only two models that can score points, you get a spread crisis, or, you know, you can end up having to do things you really don't want to do, like Eyes on the Prize with Thanos and stuff like that, which no one's happy about.
Yeah, also Ghost Rider's just able to be disabled in outside of Guardians. Like, not having access to crew is a big deal. He's, like, super vulnerable to stagger and stun.
Yeah, so stagger's very real, stun's very real. Yeah, so he's quite different. Whether it's obviously the advantage you get in Guardians, for example, which is his best home, I think, is, you know, obviously the rerolls are great, but actually you're able to still play a wide faction with Ghost Rider because you've got a number of really good 2 and 3 threats that you can put in there. So you can basically deal with the crisis problem and you can still output tons.
We talked about who's in this list at the moment. We've got, well, I guess you could just read off. It's probably better to read off the list. So let's read off the list and see where we're at.
Shall I just talk you through it and the rationale? So I'll talk you through the core bit. So loads of it's really sensible, that everyone would be aware of is Thanos with space and mind gem, Corvus Glaive with reality, Proxima, Cosmic Ghost Rider. So that's the Black Order core. But and then there's three splashes, which are Nebula, Baron Zemo, and Logan are the sort of three main splashes. And that is literally about building out different threat levels. So like your core of Black Order is 16 threat because it's Thanos, Corvus, and Proxima. And then you're building out. So you need a 2 threat, you play Nebula. You need a 3 threat, you play Zemo. You need a 4 threat, you play Logan. And at 17 threat, you probably end up dropping Proxima for Logan. And then everything else is either, am I particularly concerned about, you know, am I going to an event where I know there's going to be like 10 Web Warriors players? Okay, I'll take something to deal with that. You know what I mean? Like, here comes Agent Venom. it's that sort of like operational splashes in there. At the moment, those splashes are, as mentioned, like a Cable, Wolverine, and Colossus. But they could easily tinker into something else. But the idea is basically that's about addressing 15 threat particularly and giving me like another model that theoretically I can play on Fisk because the crisis, that's the sort of crisis that are being run. But essentially, crisis is Research Station, Montesi Formula, Legacy Virus, Intrusions, Fisk, and probably sometimes Gamma and sometimes but more likely Demons. So it's all low scoring fighty crises. Like Fisk is the highest scoring crisis on that, so it's nothing rocket science. I'm trying to create a big brawl down the middle, and ideally I probably want to be playing at 19 or 20 threat with that, because Zemo is great in Black Order, as Sploosh can testify after our game, and because also he gives you more mobility, gives you more rerolls, and Logan's really good in Black Order as well. He's great because you have a model that can hold down a flank while the other ones go and do Murder Ball.
Yeah, some cool. Zemo's always been a popular splash for Black Order just because he takes like Death Decree dice so well. Obviously, Genius reroll's useful, and just being another long mover.
Yeah, and he's got obviously having charge as well, so he has some action economy, because like the big anchor, the drag anchor you have in that is that Corvus has no action economy. So you know, and Proxima has some action economy, but she has to be able to target someone. So you're limited in that. So all of the splashes essentially have some sort of action economy and some sort of mobility to try and compensate for that. But yeah, look, Zemo's always been great in Black Order, as you say, like a flipped Zemo using all the rerolls on like a 9 dice charge is just like, it's a joy. Like you can do a lot of damage with him. And then in terms of cards, I think it's pretty much as you'd expect. So it's Mothership, Blood to Spare, Brace, Sacrifice, Execute. I'm happy to talk about Execute because I know people have views on that. Recal, Eyes on the Prize, Exceptional Healing, Fallback, and probably one from one of the splashes. So at the moment it's Cat and Mouse. I could see putting pretty sneaky Sis in for something there as well, depending on how much I thought the splash was going to come up. Or even whatever, no matter the cost, I could see coming in there as well. But the core ones that tend to get played are the 2 restricted, then execute, eyes if you've got priority sometimes, and blood to spare if you're into another fighting team. Yeah, Mothership comes in every game. Sometimes you don't use it, but like, but when you don't have it and you need it, it's like a dire situation. Yeah, so Mothership's like the lock card, basically. Usually, you play the Black Order cards. Usually, play two Black Order cards, the two restricteds, and another, depending on sort of setup. But it's quite fluid on that front.
I mean, what kind of threat values are you looking at?
So when I originally started playing, I was trying to jam in as many 16s as possible. But now I basically ideally actually want to play at 19 threat. 19 or 20 threat is nice because it gives you like an extra, that extra body. You've got like 33% more bodies of that. So it's quite helpful. Like you, so usually 18, 19, 20 is actually a better place for Black Order than just playing with the three. But you're still tall and you can still basically, the things you're trying to riff on, I guess, with it is like, look, there's a reason that Follow Me got banned. Having Follow Me built into your squad, like, just gives you so much, you know, it's a pretty standard wargaming trope, right? You know, go, you know, make sure you go first every single round and top and tail stuff and then kill something and top and tail it. So it's like, you know, anyone who's played any wargame will have seen that. Like, obviously the sad thing is in MCP, it's pretty hard to go last then first unless you're Crimson. But like, that is only a good thing for the game perspective. So yeah, so that's the idea, is you're usually trying to play around. Usually I'd like to play four wide, which basically means playing at 18, 19, or 20 threat. But 16 is fine as well. The weaker ones, I think, for them are 17 and 15.
Yeah, 17 gets weird because you're Black Order Core 16, and then you like don't really want to swap any of them out.
You usually end up losing Proxima for Logan. That's probably, which is like, which isn't terrible, because actually you're usually taller than your opponent at 17, but you're not like, you obviously don't have that the same level of control that the husband and wife gives you. And that's quite an interesting thing, I think, in general with MCP, is like, we talked about this before, didn't we? Like, so MCP's control is weird in MCP, I think, because you don't have the same level of passive control that you'd often have in other war games, because you don't have zones of control or melee zones or whatever they're called. So there's no like passive, I walk into this space, something might happen, or I literally can't move through this part of the board because it's in a zone of control or whatever. So your control is very much about like, how do, like, what will my model do to interact with another model if it goes there? Like, you've only got that kind of control. You don't have that like soft control. And my sort of standard like style of play in other games is I basically play between two play styles that are both quite extreme. It's either I'll use the common parlance of 40k, even though I'm not a 40k player, but like I'll use them. But the most universally understood is basically janky bullshit, so Eldar, or like, you know, like, or Imperial, or like just like straight line big brawl, like sort of Plague Marines type stuff. Like, so I basically either want a big brawly fight or I want lots of mobility jank. And usually for me, that janky playstyle is a lot about passive control. Like, it's a lot about how do you screen parts of the board off and stop people coming through and that sort of thing. So with MCP, I've gone to the other side of it, which it definitely does have, which is basically hitting things really, really hard. But Black Order do give you control in that they are able to threaten to take out models. That's one of the more aggressive forms of control, I think, you have in MCP. Yeah, you know, if you have throws and you have pushes, but you don't have that, like, you can't do something just because I'm standing here, like, which is a sort of much more common in other games. So one thing Black Order do well is kind of maximize a combination of the Thanos portals and pushes with, if you come this near to me, you're just gonna die, and that's the sort of balance that they can strike.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. Yeah, because Thanos has like the mind space tractor beam that has been plaguing the game for a long time. I say plaguing, but it was for a minute. It's like AMG's released a lot of tools.
Yeah, anything like that in any game where you can drag a model in from a really long way away is, as you say, can be kind of a negative experience. And especially like the first time it happens to you in like literally any war game, we're like, oh, well, this is bad. Like, you know, I was here, now I'm dead. So I think that's, you know, and obviously I think that has got definite workarounds, and you're making a trade-off between, you know, you don't have fighty Thanos, you've got sort of more controlly Thanos. But what it does allow Black Order to do in terms of control is sort of they're not just good at fighting, they're good at controlling the tempo of fights, because they can, you know, early doors you can select which models coming in to fight you, and then later doors you can essentially push some models away so that you can maximize as many of your models going into as few of the opposition models as possible. So that's sort of the bit you want to control.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not on like a pay to flip, oftentimes they can't super run away, and you're really happy to have like other models be forced to score, and then you can pick your fights and start removing things at will.
Yeah, and hence why the crises, particularly the secure crises, are, you know, they're going to be central, they're going to be down the line, and look, and Black Order love portals because portals obviously solves the Corvus mobility issue. Because you just keep hopping between the portals, and that's, you know, that's also fine. And, you know, sometimes you can spend there and move off and things like that as well. So yeah, so we've got quite a lot of like sort of variation built in there. So the idea, I guess, is you're trying to compensate. It's like anything, right? You're trying to compensate for what the weaknesses of the list are, which is low model count, slightly lower mobility, and you know, you can extracts can definitely run away from you with the strengths of the list, which is that you can kill pretty much anything. And that you have this like this ability to dictate the tempo of a fight with Thanos, and that's all what they and that's sort of what you see in the splashes as well. So they either allow me, they sort of follow a similar archetype. Basically, they're mobile on the output, more damage to try and compensate for some of that weakness.
I have another question about the secures. So in the past, I ran some Black Order with some success, and other people have, and people used to run like MAPD. Like, I think Extremis, I don't think is great now because of the 17 points is weird, but Cosmic Invasion is 16 points. And I know people would be able, you can like play one flank, Corvus like owns that flank, and then Thanos can like goaltend the rest of it. And do you feel like the Thanos nerfs maybe edge that out?
I think, yeah, I found Ds are fine until they're not fine. Right, I think that's probably the thing to say. Like, so if you get them in combination with another scoring crisis, they're slightly too many points on the table, I think, and you're sort of dragged inside out a bit. And I think, yeah, particularly against mobile teams, and the Thanos nerfs, like the changes to Thanos, right? So the pro, the addition of gems being unrestricted means you're actually better into fighting teams than you were before, because you suddenly have Brace and you have Sacrifice, or you have Indomitable, or you have Patch Up, right? There's not actually that many restricted cards that are really good for objective teams. Sacrifice is, you know, helpful in the sum, but like not in this. You're definitely better into fighting teams because people can't just throw size 4 terrain at you. You can sacrifice off and keep Thanos on his good side, or whatever you want to do. But the downside is, because you can only portal once, you've lost power into objective based teams, because that's one of the ways that you're either dragging models back in, you're pushing them off points, so you can do that less. So you want, in my experience, I personally, someone else might have come up with something clever, I'm looking for less points on the table, and I'm looking for less like rotation, I think, as well, because you don't, also for those you don't have Ds, you don't have good eyes models, like, you know, I do occasionally use eyes on Corvus, just in order to, where I'm like, actually this could get away from me too much, but look, you're using a 5 threat model that is your main damage output piece and eyes on the prize piece, and then you're down 2 power at the start of the next turn and stuff like that, so it's not ideal. So generally, I think that's generally my sort of view on Ds. Like, and I think also if you get them into Webs or Avengers or something like that with another spread crisis, you're in so much trouble.
Eyes on the prize Corvus feels weird to me top of my head, just because you no longer can mothership with him unless he dies.
Yeah, which he does do. Like, so I'm often quite happy to hold Corvus. Like, I don't mind having an objective on Corvus. Like, if you think you're going to mother, I tend to mothership later rather than sooner because it's expensive. So it's often quite hard to spend 2 for mothership and then 3 for Glaive's Edge, which is what you basically want to be doing. So often I'll want to have the power in the bank, and often it's about getting Corvus back into play as quickly as possible after he's been flipped. It'll depend. Obviously, if it's an objective team, that's not the case really at all. But like, I tend to use it later on because that's where that position often also, because then if Thanos is flipped, you've got less mobility control. So that's when it tends to come out to play. I know some people like to do this, you know, and the same with Asteroid M, it's the big splash. I'm moving up and I'm coming in on turn 1. I'm dropping this model on your head. I think Corvus doesn't have quite the same power turned on as Magneto does, so you basically want to start attacking with Corvus when you've got 3 power. So I think on turn 1, you know, ideally what you want to do is make like 1 attack with him and be at 3 power at the top of the next turn, so you can then just start that train rolling. But if there's nothing else there, then you can sometimes eyes on the prizes all right with him, and you just don't have another option as well. So if you're really concerned that like the whole thing is basically about this one central extract, and if I have that, ultimately you're going to have to come to me to get it, like, I will do that.
I could see that being relevant on like Montesi formula. That scenario often plays out like that. So, which is in the list.
Yeah. So, but it's always a feel bad. It's one of those feel bad Corvus plays. You're like, I guess I'm going to do this. Like, you know, the same way if you ever use Gainer, you're like, okay, fine, I'll use the Gainer. Like, but there's not anything else. You don't.
The Atom Splitter has randomly just one shot people in my experience. You know, it's four dice with Reality Gem, and like maybe you could desecrate it sometimes. So it's like not awful.
Oh yeah. Every now and again, you're like, oh, I thought, yeah, it's amazing. Like, sometimes it's just like, yeah, when you occasionally, like, a flipped 8-dice Atom Splitter is a suddenly really bonkers gun attack. but usually, especially in an early turn, you're just like, okay, fine, I'll do that. Like, I don't want to double move because I'm going to get battered on some point, or I don't want to, but it's, yeah, oh, definitely, it can be good. It's definitely the worst part of his kit, but it's not by any means bad.
So you mentioned, speaking of Corvus, you mentioned Execute here. I know that's kind of like a mixed opinion card. You seem to be a fan. I know Sploosh said he got executed.
yeah. I know it's quite a Marmite card. I really like it because sometimes you really just want to guarantee that you kill something. So there's that for a start. Like, no defense. So I think also one of the things about MCP, right, about, you've got two things in this, is you have normal wargaming stuff, which is, you know, you want to try and even out your dice as much as possible. And there's lots of ways people do that, by putting in rerolls or, you know, in Corvus's case, counting blanks. But the other bit I think people talk about less is it's so spiky because it's not that like evening of, like, if you think of another war game which plays on more than six-sided dice, say Infinity, there's so many other, like, that has other modifications to dice to even it out. So the big thing in MCP is you also want to maximize spikes. Like, you're like, spikes will happen, so how do you engineer them, or how do you make the most of them? So for me, Execute is basically Execute plus Glaive's Edge is just an engineered massive dice spike, because you're basically, you know, like, you're rolling hits on 7 out of 8 sides of your dice, and your opponent's got no defense dice. And I know some people balk at the cost, and it is an expensive card to play, but because it's 2 for Corvus and 2 for Proxima. But if you just build her with the Execute attack, you almost guaranteed to get back between like 5 and 8 power. So there's that to it as well, which is pretty spicy. And and also in the current meta where you've got like a lot of kaiju sort of wandering around, you're just like, I just want to do like 8 damage to this model, and that's going to happen with that. And I think that's where it's really, really useful.
Yeah, that actually sounds really good. I mean, removing CGR's defense dice or removing Bill's defense dice seems exceptional, you know?
Yeah, it's, you know, or Hulk, right? I Hulk. Yeah, something like that, where you're just like, I just need to get. And also, the other thing is, you're usually from that. So if you have, say, 5 power to play that, so you spend 2 for Execute on Corvus, you spend 3 for Glaive's Edge, you attack, you can quite often end up with enough power afterwards to then Glaive's Edge spender.
Yeah, if they have a sack of health that you just build off of, you can just make it back. That's like one of the big things with Black Order, is counting how much damage you'll actually do to something so you can check your power economy afterwards. That wasn't apparent to me until I played them.
Yeah, because it's quite easy to overkill. Yeah, that's the other side of it. It's like, but I think that's what you're, but they, that's what Execute does for me, is it gives you like a, you know, as long as you don't like walk into sacrifice or something like that, because obviously that causes a lot of issues with it, but like, barring that, like, it allows you to engineer this just like enormous dice spike, and it's a very powerful husband and wife combination, because usually, basically, if you play that right, you can usually kill 2 characters with it, like, pretty comfortably, like, with husband and wife and Execute, like, and from a standing start. Like, I think in the terrible TTS knockout game I played when I had COVID, don't play TTS knockout games against Avengers when you've got COVID. You'll make a lot of mistakes. Like, that's the learning. But I think I do full to zero, like, Bill and, I can't remember, somebody else, like, with that play. So, like, yeah, you can definitely do that. But I think the big one is, like, where is that? If your whole team is built around this big centerpiece model, like, it's a really good way of dealing with it.
Yeah, I could see it. That's definitely interesting. I've played it, and, yeah, the power economy feels a little awkward, but, and also, like, the range one, but I don't know. It's probably better with more reps or whatever, so.
It's one that requires some work, and you've got to know, I guess, when am I not trying to force this? Like, because you can really try and be like, I'm going to, you know, you can really try and force the issue with it, but it doesn't necessarily, yeah, it's not always going to happen. But I think the other thing to remember is, but the other one with the range one thing is to remember, it's only within range one of one of the characters. So the usual play is, like, you go first with Proxima, you spear throw into a model, and then you place within one of it, and then you do something else or the other way, and then you husband and wife. So you can be quite far. You know, Corvus can be three away if you use the spender. So it's surprisingly, so the trick is to always go with Proxima as the model that sets up the execute.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. I definitely misremember that.
I don't know if it's been changed because a few people have said that to me, and I've been like, and it's one of those things that every time someone says it, you're like, am I a cheating bastard? Am I doing this like completely? And then you go back and you read the card. Yeah, no, so it's within.
It definitely hasn't been changed. So yeah, I'm probably just like bad at reading or bad at remembering or both.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like when an allied Corvus Glaive targets an enemy character with an attack that was within one of an allied Proxima Midnight or vice versa. So usually Proxima can pretty happily just drop onto someone with spear throw.
I have another question about Blood Despair. I like this card. I don't hear people talk about it very much, but I think Blood Despair is very good.
It really grew on me. It really grew on me. I didn't use it at first. And then, yeah, it's when it's good, it's really, really good. And you can Death Decree Blood Despair attacks, and you can generate power back out of it and things like that. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. Like, yeah, I think I'm pretty sure there's a textual thing with that is that it only works when you get dazed rather than KO'd. So that's one that's worth noting. So it's got to be when you first go down. But it's really fun because some of the fun stuff you can do, obviously, there's all of the Black Order models have quite good versions of this. So you can use it to unexpectedly spear throw with Proxima just before she dies and place a really long way away from where you thought she was. Or you can do the same thing with Corvus and Spender and move. Or you can do the same thing with the other one you can do is with Thanos, is obviously just suddenly like throw someone off a point or push someone off a point when they thought they were going to be locked into it. So yeah, it's a really nice card. It's it's expensive, but it's like but often if you use a builder with it and you Death Decree it, you often get the power back and it's free damage and you're a damage faction. And quite often, that, and also the other thing is you don't have to target the model that's attacking you. That's the other sudden really fun bit of it, where you're like, cool, I punch your model. He's like, oh cool, is that Star-Lord sitting over there on one health? Yeah, he's dead. Like, it's that sort of like that. It sort of really changes the mechanics of things sometime.
Yeah, you could definitely gotcha people with like, you can attack, it just says make an attack. So like you can attack anything in range, and it can be spenders, it can be builders, whatever.
And it does, and to go back to the meta boogeyman, it does double up pretty well with Cosmic Ghost Rider.
Yeah, you're like, okay, Blood Despair and got your back. So
yeah, you're suddenly Black Order masquerading a shield, but your attacks are a little bit meatier than most of shields. So it can be really powerful.
Yeah, that's sick. I like it. Have you played any games with the Black Order models that are not in this list, like Swan or Dwarf or Godforsaken Supergiant?
Yeah, I know, because I did put a thing in the Black Order chat in Discord saying, are there any questions? And someone said, can you make Supergiant work? And I think Connor, no is the answer. Like, I don't understand how to make it. I mean, it's a mark of how bad Supergiant is as a model, right? That you're in a limited roster. Almost all of your models are really high threat values. She's one of only 2-3 threats in the faction, and you never take her. She sadly, for those that don't know, basically for me, it's the giving up the objectives thing. She could just about work if it wasn't for that. Like, because if you want a 3 threat in Black Order, you want someone who holds objective points, and every time she takes damage, she drops any extracts or whatever, which is just a disaster, right? It's just a total disaster. She's like a mechanically interesting model where you can see what they're trying to do with the design, but the mechanics are also like bad. So Supergiant, I really struggle with. The others I like, so I do, and I think if you were going to go for the like non-Thanos, Corvus list, so definitely knockabout games where I've played with the Corvus leadership or just unaffiliated. Yeah, like Swan's great. Swan's a really good model. The trouble is you've got like an 8 threat leader, Corvus is a 5 threat, and now you've got Ghost Rider who's a 6 threat. So Swan's issue is more that she gets crowded out by other high value models, but she's she's good, and also she's mobile, which is good for Black Order, right? She has charge, and she and everything dies is hilarious, and her wild thing is pretty good as well. So I don't mind Swan at all. I keep trying to find places to splash her, like in other lists, just because I think she's also a lot of fun. She's one of the more fun models of Black Order. Dwarf, I think, also actually with the changes to cards, is much more viable now, because the big issue with Dwarf previously was that you, great having bodyguard is wonderful, being able to bodyguard Thanos and Corvus is great, but if someone then starts throwing your size 4 model into your own models, which is standing within two of, and you don't have Brace, like, that's really bad. But like, but objectively, if you look at Dwarf, he is not, and look, comparing models across factions is always tricky, but Dwarf isn't much different to Colossus. And Colossus is widely regarded, you know, there's some difference, but not. So he's a good model. I think the tricky thing with Black Order is you don't need another static model without any real movement economy in your 4-threat slot in Black Order. So like, if there was, I could see, I don't think anyone's objectively wrong for including him. And if you knew you were going to be in like a straight fight right down the middle with like weirdly, if you played a Black Order mirror, I think Dwarf would be amazing, because you then, you know, yeah, you've got Stagger, you've got a bodyguard, he's really hard to kill, like that sort of thing. But I don't think it's worth it for that. But and then the other tricky bit, obviously, is the card that helps with Dwarf's mobility is the Swan card. But then you're locked into playing both of them. So, but there is a world where you play, you know, like 17 threat isn't terrible with Corvus, Proxima, Dwarf, and Swan. That's not awful. But I think it's sort of you're pulling yourself in too many different directions with it. And I do think there's definitely a world where Hellfire Club take Black Dwarf, and he just sits on something. Like, you know, and obviously also similarly, I do think there's a world where Hellfire Club take Proxima or Corvus Glaive, but like there's a... But that's not true. But I think, yeah, so I don't think they're bad models. I think people have fun playing them. And that card where you drop Dwarf on top of someone with Swan's Charge is a lot of fun. And they're incinerated and then they get thrown and staggered and stuff like that. It's cool. But I guess for like if you're talking about it as like a competitive list, I think the things where it gives you an advantage are like quite a narrow set of cases. And that's a tricky bit for them. So yeah, I'm trying to think. That's all of them, isn't it? Don't think there's anyone else. Yeah, but like,
There's Maw. We didn't talk about Maw.
Oh, Maw. Yeah, Maw's really good. And same problem, right? And also the other big problem Maw has is he wants Space Gem. And that's usually on Thanos. So, like, that's the other issue. Obviously, like, Maw is, you know, and we had this in our WTC team with JJ and our team playing Convocation. Maw's a disgusting in Convocation. He's so good there. So again, he's crowded out by demands for the things that optimize him. And that's he's expensive. He's 6 threat. So actually, are you going to take a 6 threat? And so maybe like in Splish's list, right, where you don't like where you're not using the both gems, maybe you take Maw in there. But he's 6 threat. Are you going to take him or are you going to take Cosmic Ghost Rider? Like, but he's really good. He's not. I don't think he's a bad model at all. And he is mechanically pretty similar to Ghost Rider. You know, he has the push. He has the range 4. He has the place. But but he's just not quite overtuned in the way the Ghost Rider is.
Yeah, no, I agree. I've played a lot of Space Maw and in Convocation, and he always felt like my best model.
Yeah, he's amazing. Like, and you know, and it's a you know, we you know, obviously I know Maria Vyland, who is the sort of main convo player in the UK from because she was ex Guild Ball player as well, and you know she loves Space Maw. Like, you know, he's straight in any of our convo lists, and he's really really good there because he does everything you want, and he gets more out of Ironbound Books, and like there's a few models like that in Black Order which are good models. Whose best home isn't like the only models I think whose best home is the only Black Order models who I think their best home is Black Order are actually Corvus and Proxima. Like, sadly, I think, you know, Thanos and Ghost Rider, their best home is Guardians. Maw's best home is, you know, Maw's best home is probably in Convocation, Swan, don't know. And
yeah, Swan and Dwarf. I mean, I actually think Dwarf is really cool in Midnight Suns.
I could see it because Bump, right, is really, that helps a lot. And like, yeah, Dwarf plus Eye-Hulk is pretty disgusting. Like, in terms of like, there's a, again, make sure you've got Brace. I think
I've seen him beat Cosmic Ghost Rider Guardians at 15 with like Blade, Eye-Hulk, and Dwarf.
Yeah. Oh God, yeah, yeah. That would be really quite filthy. Yeah, especially if you got like a researcher or something. You're like, cool, deal with this. Like, yeah,
yeah, yeah, exactly. Just tons of collision damage and just sacks of health.
Yeah, and his eco good, and his attack suite's good. It's like, you know, comparing him to Colossus, he's got better attacks than Colossus. Like,
yeah, Dwarf's attacks are really good. Dwarf is actually, you look at his kit and you're like, why don't people play this character? It's probably just like lack of affiliations and. He's slow. And when you're looking at splash models, you just take the best, and he's probably just not the best.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's like, do you value, and you know, so if you think of the four threats, like, do you value the bodyguard and the better attack suite over, say, Beta Ray Bill? You don't really that often. You know, you need like a really, like a specific use case for him.
Bill's also just like more durable than Black Dwarf in my experience. Just the reduced to zero and the incinerate immunity and the bleed immunity is huge on Bill. Dwarf can be incinerated and killed. Like, I've seen it happen a lot.
Yeah, exactly. No, and I think you're, and also the other one is, like, I guess for splashing a lot of that use, you know, Luke Cage exists, and he does, like, he doesn't output anything like Dwarf does, but he, if you want like a model that's going to protect your other models, then, you know, and Luke Cage is three threat, like, that's pretty good. So I can see why he doesn't get picked, but I don't think, I'm looking forward to the day when someone cleverer than me, maybe your Midnight Sun's guest, comes up with some really sweet Black Dwarf tech. Like, and the same thing, I'm looking forward to that happening with Power Swan. I've knocked about with her a bit in Inhumans, because she's quite interesting there, because you suddenly, you can play the power gem still. Like, you know, either you have more power to give back out to your team, or you get everything dies online really, really fast.
Do you not play the power gem?
Exactly, yeah. And you've got Medusa to compensate. Like, you've got Medusa to really amp up her mobility, so you can pretty easily go, you know, with a turn one sort of jump or forward, throw her into something, like, and just start going pretty crazy, and incinerate and things like that. I'm not sure it's like optimal, but it's definitely a lot of fun.
Do we talk about like good or bad matchups or anything like that? Like, I mean, I guess bad matchups was like Sam.
Yeah, Sam's obviously bad, and I've not, if I'm honest, I've not really cracked some genius tech for dealing with Sam. I think that might be about what your alternative affiliation is. Like, I think there's definitely a reasonable world in which those three spare models are basically, right, I'm playing against Avengers. I am playing this into them. This is my anti-Avengers list. So Sam's not great. Everything else, like, fighting teams are good, right? That was that, you know, and we talked about WTC earlier. Like, our game plan at WTC was that Connor, the Web Warriors player in our team, plays into all scoring teams, and I play into all the fighting teams. Because it's very, very hard to outfight Black Order. And particularly in a WTC format, it's really hard to outfight Black Order because you're often down some of the pieces that you'll want. So that's fine. I think webs are difficult but not unwinnable. And then the others are quite variable. Like, good, you know, Kingpin can be really swingy. Like, you know, like, Kingpin's one that where you can basically, by turn two, one of you will have run away with it. And that's probably about, you know, sort of target selection and positioning and things like that.
Yeah, I would have said Kingpin would have been a slam dunk before, but now with the once per turn cosmic portal.
That makes a big difference. Yeah. And I think then ones that were surprising from a couple of other games, because I said, oh, I've only been playing really for 8 months. You know, I've done all right, I think, like in that time. I think I've got the Black.
Yeah, I mean, you went 5-0 at WTC, right? So.
Yeah, I think I have the badge for Black Order now as well. Yeah, randomly on Saturday, I went to an event, played Inhumans for the whole event, came away with the Black Order badge. So that's
The reason that happens is because, like, people who, like, they drop their games, get dropped from like the current count for like the last year. So
yes, I think that's what happened with Darren. Was it the guy who held the badge previously? But yeah, so I think one that I was surprised about that was surprisingly good from WTC was Shield. Like, I thought Shield could be a real pain, and played them in round three or four against Matthias Vriens, one of the Belgian players. And essentially, turns out Ghost Rider, Thanos, and Corvus just got them. Because they can't stand in their bubbles. Like, it was like, and we were talking about it before the game. And I was like, I am really worried about this matchup. I've played it like once before. You know, you've got all the things I don't like, which is you're really wide. You've got all this defensive tech, but you can just yank them out of their little bubble. And then what are they going to do?
I've played Shield into Black Order, but it was before Ghost Rider came out.
I think that makes a huge difference.
Yeah, I do think Ghost Rider is hard for Shield to deal with. Typically, at least in my experience, I feel like his defensive dice and the incinerate and bleed immunity make it hard to punch into him with your like multitude of bad attacks.
Yeah, I think that's right. You've got the combination of like your that thing of like Shield will throw chip damage at you, where you're throwing chip damage at Thanos, who's the best model in the game of withstanding chip damage, and Ghost Rider is pretty good at it. And you essentially just use those two. So basically, if you get it at that threat level, all you do is you have those two essentially dragging in one or two shield models every turn, and then Corvus batters them, and then at the next turn he kills someone, and then you do this, you just rinse and repeat the same process. It's like really unsubtle play, but it's really hard to avoid because you've got such an extensive drag range between Thanos and Ghost Rider.
Yeah, also it's that, and also just Ghost Rider's attack is so far that like Eye in the Sky doesn't do anything a lot of the time.
Yeah, exactly. And also that you have, I guess, like the ability to like, you know, place Ghost Rider with Thanos, and unlike into other factions, you're not, shield aren't going to one shot Ghost Rider. Like the risk of moving him forward, like outside of his own activation sequence, is always that there's just something that's going to do, you know, either reposition him or do a ton of damage to him or something like that. And that isn't shield's game.
Yeah, shield have like no displacement. If you're able to like remove models with high power from like dying, then like Helios laser is not an option. Yeah, I found Ghost Rider, the times I beat him with shield were times when my opponent misplayed and like gave me priority, and then I like Helios'd him.
Yeah, which makes total sense. And that's like the same with, and I guess also the other one is actually one of the ones where Space Mind Thanos is probably better than Reality Space Thanos, because you just want the displacement so much, and you know it's not that hard to punch through shield guys when they're not in their little bubble. But yeah, so broadly I tend to find, other than Avengers, there's not like really bad Black Order matchups, but there's not like really, really good Black Order matchups. Like they're quite a sort of, because you're playing a slightly different game to everyone as well. You know, you're playing this sort of weird, like, but the trick is all, the thing I've found is you have to think harder about the crisis on turn. Obviously, it's MCP, you always have to think hard about the crisis, but you really have to think hard about how many points do I need at the end of turn one, or the end of, or by at least the end of turn two, to be in this. And how do I, and that, and it, so the, like the turn one target selection for like the Thanos tractor beam is really, really important, because you have to go after a model that will deny your opponent points. So they either have to have an extract and you're comfortable you're going to kill them and take it off them, or they have to be the only model that's on a secure, or some, you know, there's got to be that sort of thing. Like what you can't do is like, and I've definitely lost games by making that mistake, by being like, oh cool, I can pull in Kingpin, but he's not doing anything. So now I'm like punching a tough to kill model for no extra points.
Yeah, just like not killing Kingpin is a catastrophe as well. Like if the dice just not quite enough, then he's just like, all right, double spender, and now your whole round is ended. Like,
yeah, exactly. You're like, oh good, this is going well for everyone then. Yeah. But I think that's worth realizing. I think it's like that's the trigger point, on especially on turn one. It's like, it can't just be I'm pulling someone and I'm going to attack them. It has to be, am I denying you points by this? And like, and how many sad sort of Corvus Glaive Thanos activations am I going to have to make on turn one where I just stand on something because I just can't be like 5 points behind at the end of turn one?
Yeah, if you're just, you kind of play it like shield, right? Where you're like, if I'm like one or two down, it's fine. Any more than that and you're sweating.
Yeah, definitely. Unless you get like something really good for it. Like, you know, unless you get, you know, say like Star-Lord for it or something like that, then you're like...
Correct, yeah. If their velocity is going to drop dramatically from that, then it's like winnable. But yeah, you definitely don't want to be going down like 4 or 5 VPs.
Yeah, so I think that's the big challenge, is like how many sad activations are you making on turn one where you're, you know, like that's like where I'm not, because then you, and also how quickly, I guess, can you basically form a sort of death ball, and how much of a death ball do you need? Because that's the other bit, is who's going to run down someone, which is where someone like Nebula is really useful.
Yeah, Nebula is also a really popular splash for Black Order. I mean, I'm honestly surprised she's not affiliated. I think a lot of other people feel that way.
Really confused she's not affiliated. I think that does feel like a really strange decision, I think. Yeah, and I'm not a big films guy, but I've definitely, you know, I've seen a couple of the Guardians stuff. So I'm pretty sure she's in Thanos, you know, like, you know, even as a layman rather than like a deep lore guy. Yeah, and she's really good there as well. So that's the other thing. She's a long mover. Her weakness that she doesn't screw VPs is fine, because you've got Thanos's VP for her, and she's going to chase down objectives off.
Correct. Yeah, if she kills things, she scores VPs, you know. So
yeah, and again, like talking about Zemo, you know, Death's Decree on Nebula, especially on a flipped Nebula, is, you know, that can be like a really that can catch people by surprise, like a sudden like 10 dice Nebula spender with, you know, all the rerolls.
Yep. Yeah, it's bad. And then it's like, if they want to like deal with her, they're just like killing a non-scoring two threat, and it's just like,
yeah. And she's a brilliant sacrifice model as well, like, you know, she's that, which is another amazing, like, cool, yeah, fine, you can Helios into Thanos and Nebula's gonna take it on the chin, like, that I am totally cool with that, like, there's yeah, so she's got a lot of utility, I think.
Yeah, no, I like Nebula here a lot. That's kind of how I felt with Black Order when I played them. It was like, nothing felt like it was, everything felt fine, like, for me, playing Black Order. Everything, all my matches felt fine, except for, like, a few things that were bad. And it was like, does my opponent have the checklist of things that I don't like?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Are they able to run away from me? Are they going to make, like, me have to, like, walk Corvus more times? It's that sort of stuff. And, look, I think, undoubtedly, like, you know, if you were being, if you're probably being more competitive than I am with them, you would just play Ghost Rider loads more, and that would solve, I think, quite a lot of those problems. Like, they have the tools for that. It's just not us. Like, and I have. It's not like I've not played Ghost Rider, right? I'm going to be quite clear about that. It's just I'd just rather not. And I don't think that's bad that anyone does. Right, the model exists. It's legitimate. Like, it's in the rules, so that is totally fine. But I think that probably helps with some of those matchups. But yeah, the matchups where people can just like continually move away from you, and you know, and it's spread, and you can't really pull it together. I think that's where you really have to think about when you're constructing a Black Order list. Like, what are your splash pieces? Because that's essentially your tech for that.
And I would say for people playing into Black Order, things that the Black Order player doesn't like is if you kind of just park all your models behind your back gamma shelter.
Yeah, they hate that. Like, there's so many things. Yeah, I think that's like, yeah, I didn't know we were going to actually give people advice on how to play into them. Like, this feels
Yeah, I feel like that's probably valuable here. I mean, Black Order can be extremely frustrating to play into if you're like, what's happening? But basically what happens is just like, it's going to feel really bad to like not score, but it's better than losing your models. And like, Black Order doesn't really want to score either. And like, Steve's list here has a whole bunch of crises that don't score.
Yeah, like, so for example, I played WTC in round 5, played into a really good Italian player. I can't remember his name, unfortunately. He was great. And he had what was clearly a list that was designed to play into, like, Thanos / CGR Guardians. And he played Colossus, Cyclops, Jean Grey, and Black Bolt. And it was just, and he's like, I'm not coming forwards. Like, enjoy your no portals, and enjoy trying to punch through this with Too Dangerous to Ignore and Bodyguard, and you can't push me, and you can't, like, and also I have multiple long-range guns. So that's one interesting interpretation of it. Now, that, weirdly, I think I got lucky in terms of Crisis Section, because we ended up on Fisk, so I ended up in this bizarre situation of being like, I'm Black Order, and I'm just going to keep scoring, you know, I'm going to, like, really aggressively play the Fisk points. Like, so it's just fast enough for me to get away with it. But I think it's an example of exactly what you're saying, of like, I'm sitting deep, I'm not overcommitting into you, and like, we can play this slowly, because at some point, either, you know, I can outrange you, but more commonly, I think, for teams, it's like, it's okay if you can steal all the objectives on turn 2 and run away with them, and you've not lost a model, that's good. That's like, Black Order don't like that. Like, you know, so it's more important to not lose, like, important models on it. I think the other thing is they don't like displacement. They really don't like being displaced. Corvus hates being displaced. Separating Corvus and Proxima is okay. We talked about Ebony Maw. They hate Shush and they hate No More Mutants, because you wouldn't think using Shush or No More Mutants against a one power superpower, but using against husband and wife is backbreaking if you have access to that. So things like that they don't like. They don't like being separated from each other, particularly either Corvus or Thanos. I think if you can move them around, that's always really helpful. Stagger's really good into them. So models like Black Cat are good into them. So they've got a lot of, like, there's definitely counterplay to them. The trick is also, like, the other thing is, but the flip side of that is, like, your usual, like, I'll just go and stand on this point out on an extreme side of a wing, like on, say, a C shape or something like that, and I'll be all right because I'm behind a piece straight. You're not. Like, don't do it. Like, you're in range. Like, and not only that, you're actually in range for Thanos just to gem, walk, place, drag, and then attack you if you're anywhere near the midline.
The rule of thumb is just be behind any close secure, like a back gamma or a back infinity formula. Like, just be behind those. If like Thanos wants to come in that far, then he's pretty overly committed. And he can be scary for the Thanos player if you're like the other player's primed to just make attacks into Thanos, because he's like, Thanos like can't go first. If Thanos is going first, then like Black Order's in trouble.
Yeah, I agree with that. And also it's much more important for you in Black Order to keep him on his good side than it is in, say, some of the other factions, because you're often using him when reality is more of a fighting piece. But this is like, I really want the portals and I really want the leadership.
Yeah, if you're able to flip Thanos, then their whole plan falls apart, especially if it's early. Like, if you get a big spike into Thanos on rounds like one or two, it's like almost an auto win.
Yeah. If you can force an over... that's the idea. Yeah, you're right. You sit deep, you force an overextension of Thanos, and then Thanos goes down. And also, because the bit is also Thanos is trying to drag your models into position. Like, so I won't go last with Thanos in turn one, usually. I usually want Thanos to be the second last model that activates, because he pulls someone in, hits them, and then someone else attacks them twice. Like, that's the ideal sort of... So if you can deny that by Thanos having to walk twice in place in order to even drag anyone, and then someone else has to move, it's just all of the efficiency goes down. Because the dream scenario is obviously you get Thanos, you drag someone in, and then Corvus hits them twice, flips them, and then the next turn, Corvus with a bunch of power just takes them off the board, and then you're rolling, basically.
When you're Black Order, you're like, oh, your opponent walks somebody to the middle and I have all unactivated models. And it's like, all right, this will be fun.
It's the dream. I was chatting to, actually, this was what, so the aforementioned Connor Rooney was saying when I came over to play, because I played like two games and went to a tournament, and I was saying, like, how do you think I'll be all right? You know, what do you think? And he just said, look, someone in the game, one of the games you play, someone is just going to walk their model first activation into the middle of the board. And that was true. That definitely, I was like, oh, this is great. Like, that's it.
There's a really funny story that I feel like would be appropriate for this episode. There's the guy who won the TTS League with Black Order was a guy named Ulysses. It was like a couple years ago now, but he played in an IRL event. And he won that tournament, and his round one, it was like gamma. It was like 15 points gamma, and gems weren't locked, so he was able to play one gem Thanos. His opponent's first activation was just like double move Magneto to the middle gamma shelter.
What? No, that's not good. Like, yeah. I am, and I don't mean this, like, I'm genuinely amazed how often it happens, right? And I get it, it's like, you know, if you've not played before, but it's interesting where... Yeah, like the sort of decision making of that is sort of, and it, obviously, like, that's what you say about not knowing what you're playing against as well. Like, so that's, yeah.
Yeah, I think 2 years ago the Black Order stuff did not bleed into the IRL community. It was mostly like a TTS thing. So I could understand like not having any idea what's about to happen.
Yeah, totally. And definitely, even like, they're not super common at the moment. So it's also that interesting bit Yeah, I've definitely come up against people where they just don't know what they do. And I like to think that I try and explain that to them, because it's not, but it's a difference. I guess one of the things I think with MCP, and I'm definitely one of these type of war gamers, is like, I'm not that great at Theory Hammer. Like, I can do it, but like, actually, once I've played something five or six times, then I get it and I can work it through real fast. With the rest of it, like, yeah, I think so. You can tell someone, don't do this, but then you're like, but my plan was to do this, so I'm going to do this. And I think especially because MCP's got quite, like, you know, it's got quite chest opening turn ones. Like, a lot of people feel like they've solved their turn one, but actually, I think for the solved turn one thing, Black Order, if you don't really know what they do, are very much, what's the Mike Tyson adage? You know, everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the face. Like, it's that sort of, like, everyone's got a plan until Thanos drags your opening Gambit model halfway across the board and tears his head off.
Yeah, that's something I want to do on a normal Danger Room episode on lately, is just, like, MCP openings. And because I've felt like I've lost, I guess this is sort of a tangent, but the games I've lost, I feel like I just have suboptimal openings.
So it's really interesting for me, because I think, so we used to do on the podcast I used to forget, but we used to do quite a lot of like newbie mistake episodes, and quite a lot of that obviously was about turn one, because that's in any game the easiest thing to structure. But one of the things we talked about quite a bit at WTC, actually, because there's another guy on my list who hasn't played a lot of MCP on my team, who hasn't played a lot of MCP, but has played a lot of like War Machine and Guild Bomb, as a very high ranked player in both of those, was how do you compensate for like, not having like a really rigid turn one? Like, I feel like my turn ones compared to some people are like fine, but not amazing. But actually, when the game degenerates a bit, then I tend to be able to outplay people. If that makes sense. So I think there is definitely, and I think that's also the tricky bit, is there's a really weird balance between like really, really, you know, you want to have a good turn one, obviously, and that is like and you don't want to make errors in it, but there's also a bit of like, when it gets more wild, how does that play? And if you look at like, say, you know, the stream games from like Aaron Collier, is it the Webs player? Like, where he seems like he's not doing anything crazy in turn one compared to some of the plays that you see people do, where they do these incredibly intricate like turn one. It's just that as soon as the game devolves, he's like, his decision making is just amazing.
Yeah, he just wings it, like, pretty much.
yeah, but turn one's the most important turn because you can plan it the most, but it is also only 1/6 of the game theoretically, so you can definitely lose. So for me, as someone who's not, you know, got the longevity in the game and necessarily the time to come up with really elaborate things, hence why I'm playing a faction that has a very simple turn one. And almost my turn one is restricted even more by having only 3 to 4 models. Like, I'm just trying to reduce the sort of decision points on it.
I do have a couple fun questions I like to ask everybody before we end. You said you weren't a big comics guy, but if you could have any character in MCP that isn't here already, who would it be?
Ooh, that is a good one. Any character in Marvel? I mean, it's probably Doctor Doom, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, it's probably him, realistically. especially because Marvel is ill-served by baddies. Like,
I would agree.
He feels like a good baddie to have.
Yeah, definitely feels Doom definitely feels missing in the game for sure. And then
it's coming. Surely this is coming.
I mean, I suspect that. I mean, it's pretty obvious that I think AMG is fans of Fantastic Four and Doom. Like, Doom has even been referenced on like Squirrel Girl's box text.
Okay.
So like they are aware of these characters. I wouldn't be surprised if it's just Disney that is holding F4 across like all media for the movie or whatever.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, or there's just a like, and, you know, or if they're being super smart about it, what are their big ticket
releases? Yeah,
and you've got, because you'd have to keep something big back, won't you?
So I think we'll get them at some point.
Yeah.
And then, are you a heroes or a villains guy?
Oh, interesting. In general, so I usually in war games play goodies. But generally, especially in sort of Hollywood films, I basically always want the bad. I like the baddies. Like, the goodies are always a bit saccharine. And I'm old enough to have grown up in the era where it was, you know, the goodies in in Hollywood films were always like Kevin Costner or someone like that. You're just a big plank of vanilla. Like, nobody cares. Like, you know, it's like, I want Alan Rickman to kill you. Like, that's what I want.
Yes, Robin Hood. I love that movie.
So, fun fact about that, Mike, is in terms of like, I'm sure a deep fan of historical accuracy. The bit where Robin Hood and Morgan Freeman, they land at the White Cliffs of Dover in the south of England, and they get out, and Kevin Costner says, we'll be in Nottingham by nightfall. So Nottingham's like 300 miles from the White Cliffs of Dover, so we're going to walk there by night. And the best bit is, the next shot, they're in Scotland. So they've just missed it by another casual 200 miles. Like, so that's a great moment.
Oh man, I got to rewatch it again now with that in mind. That's hilarious. But yeah. Kevin Costner Robin Hood is great. It's very like 90s, but it's great.
Yeah, it really is. Alan Rickman's second great villain role.
Yes, correct. Okay, I think that will wrap us up here. Steve, thank you for coming on.
Hey, my pleasure, really man. Great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. And listeners, we will see you in the next episode. Bye.
Take care.